Whether you keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs, these are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast. What's up, everybody? This is Jeremy Turgeon from Brass Band Reptiles.
And I'm Rob, and I'm creeping it real.
And we're getting ready for another awesome guest.
I'm super pumped.
Yes,
super,
this is going to be great. Rob, who do we have tonight?
Bum. We have Dennis McNamara on here. How are you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Hell yeah, doing great, man.
Yeah. So for the people who might not know who you are, or they might not follow you on social media or that sort of thing, where did you kind of get your passion for reptiles? Are you always a lifelong reptile lover?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's kind of a story. But I don't know, as a kid, I mean, I grew up across from some woods, and we'd go catch some animals, but just whatever was out there and whatever we saw. But I think the turning point for me was a David Letterman episode. I don't know. I think I was probably like 13 or something like that, and he had somebody on, I don't remember who, that had a whole bunch of animals, and it took me about a year to convince my mother that I needed to have some of those animals. And then I did it, and I actually had a biology teacher in high school that had a boa and a black grass snake and a tokay and a rose tarantula, and I think that was about it. And so it kind of made it so those kind of things spurred me on, and I don't know, and then I used to go to this big pet store that was near me called Animal Jungle, and then I started working there when I was in high school, and that kind of made it. So we had it was a big pet store. We did, I don't know, and it was a 27,000 square foot pet store. It was an old Food Lion.
Wow.
And damn, yeah.
We had a big reptile section. We did, this was in, I mean, I don't know, I started working there in 1993, I think, 1993, and at that time we did like $40,000 or $50,000 of the reptile business a month.
Wow.
It was like, you know, for that time frame and all the things that were there, it was a great time. I got to see a lot of cool stuff. I got to learn a lot of things, and it actually segued into my current career. I work at a zoo. A customer and the guy who works at the zoo was like, "You need to come work at a zoo," and I was like, "I do." And he was like, "Yeah." And he brought me an application. I filled it out, and that was almost 21 years ago that I started working at the zoo. So,
wow.
I don't know. So I've had a private collection that whole time, and then I've gotten to do it professionally in multiple different aspects, and so it's been great.
That's incredible. And hell yeah. So he was just like one of the customers that came in, and he was like, "You know a lot about animals. You need to come work for us."
Pretty much. I mean, we've become friends. I mean, yeah. I knew him. I knew him over, and there's a very big herp community here in this area in Virginia Beach. And so he was one of the guys I got to know. He's one of my better friends. He's in my wedding. And just knowing him over the years, and I don't know, I mean, I'd known him for a few years at that point in time, and then he just was like, "There's a spot. You should really take it. I think you'd be great." And then, you know, again, like, you couldn't do that today. Like, I have interns that work for me that work for free for a year or 2 years just trying to get an interview. And, like,
yeah,
he really brought me an application, turned it in, got me an interview, and I got a job the first time I even tried. So I was super lucky, and again, I don't think it would never happen that way today. So yeah. I try to remember that whenever I have people come to intern for me or work for me or whatever else, just that I really had it fall in my lap. I mean, not to say I didn't work hard and I did a good job, I think. So, you know, I mean, I think all those things helped, but I really did just luck out.
Yeah. And what are some of the things that you work with at the zoo, or like some of the things you're really, because I love seeing all the stuff that you're working with over there. And it's super interesting to me. So what are some of the things that you work with on, you know, a daily or weekly basis at the zoo?
My job is I oversee the reptile section. So the reptile department of the zoo, we have roughly, I don't know, say 500 animals, roughly 100 species, give or take, depending on what we have going on. And we have everything from Siamese crocodile, we have king cobra, we have Ethiopian mountain adder, we have rhino vipers, we have green tree pythons, Amazon basin emeralds, black, blue, yellow, green tree monitors, croc monitor, grave monitor, aldabra tortoise. There's a whole bunch of different stuff. And people always ask me what's my favorite or what gets me excited. And I'm really lucky that I actually get to pick up the collection. So
it's all stuff you love.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, I don't know, it all excites me. I don't ever, there's not an exhibit in there. Well, we have like a Madagascar hissing cockroach exhibit, but sometimes I'm like, oh, we could do something cooler, but people like it.
And
yeah.
We actually made it in. There's a woman that volunteers for us that does incredible artwork, and she actually made it into a roach motel. We are in there, and there's roaches going all over us, so it's pretty cool. I'm very lucky to be in the spot that I am, and then just got to pick out really a whole bunch of cool animals. There are a couple things, like I didn't get Komodo. I really wanted Komodo, but we didn't get that. I have cross monitors, I have gradient monitors, we have white throat monitors, we have black, blue, yellow, green tree monitors. So I can't really complain too much.
Yeah.
I think we have monitors that are rarer than Komodos.
I was saying grays. I was just going to say.
Yeah.
Glazed right over the fact that you guys have grays monitors. And I was like, wait a second, what?
Yeah, it's a crazy lizard that eats figs and fruit like they're alive. It's amazing.
Yeah. So they still try and kill it and everything like it's alive?
Oh, we only have one. It's a female, and like she'll try to, like, if you walk in there and you have a radio on, she'll try to eat your radio. Like, she's just kind of a
wow.
She's just kind of a machine. She has no fear of anything, and she's just kind of like she just when she wants something, she just kind of takes it.
Then, wow.
And we do a lot of bugs, and she gets one rodent a week, plus like micro or superworm 3 days a week, and then fruit one day a week. But I would say everything is eaten with the same ambition. It's kind of crazy.
That is wild. I don't think I've ever seen a grays monitor in person.
No, me either.
It's a beautiful lizard. I mean, it's really yellow. We have a female, so probably like adult mangrove monitor size, kind of. Like, okay. Probably like 4.5 feet.
Yep. Yeah.
The males can be big. The males can be, they call them banjo lizards in the wild in the Philippines. They can be like almost, the males can be like 5 or 6 feet, I think, on some of the big males.
Wow.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's a good size monitor for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty much just it's a tree monitor. I mean, there's like it really hardly is ever on the ground unless it's kind of searching for things. It's always in the trees, always looking for things up there, and super cool animal.
Yeah, and you guys work with, you guys have some mangshans there and like parviocula and stuff like that.
Yep. Oh. So our venomous collection, we have parviocula, we have mangshans. Which parviocula are my favorite.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
We have rhino vipers. Rhino vipers, we have reviled rattlesnakes, we have pierced the spectral rattlesnake, we have barbed eye, red pygmies, we have timber rattlesnakes, we have some Mexican cantil, mileage flavor. I think that might be it. There might be something I'm missing, and then a king cobra.
Hell yeah.
That's a cool section.
Yeah.
No, it's a great little group of animals.
Yeah, it's crazy because like I think about the zoos around here and they don't really have venomous snakes on display. I think the only place in New England that I can think of that has venomous snakes, like Nerd, we had some on display, but we don't really display them off that much anymore. Besides Lilith. The blue-eyed leucistic king cobra, she's on display. So, like, when people take a tour of the facility, they'd see her. Mm-hmm. But most of our venomous collection is not on display. I'm trying to think. The Museum of Science in Boston has timber rattlesnakes on display. But that's pretty much it. It's, like, hardly – since venomous snakes are so heavily regulated in New England, no one privately owns them, and most of the zoos are not very interested in having them. So you can't really see. You have to go outside of, our immediate area if you want to see any venomous snakes on display. So it's interesting to me to go out other places and see stuff. Like, we had gone to a zoo in Catoctin, like, Pennsylvania area.
Yeah.
And they have, like, a king cobra, and they've got timber rattlesnakes. They've got eyelash vipers, a lot of different stuff on display. And I was just like curious, so I asked one of the zookeepers who had come into the reptile house. I was like, hey, like, who takes care of your reptiles? And he was like, oh, well I do. And I was like, so you have like, do you have your own pet reptiles? He's like, oh no, I had never worked with reptiles before 6 months ago. And I was like, oh my god, you have king cobras and all this stuff and a croc monitor in here, and you haven't worked with reptiles besides 6 months?
Oof.
It's wild.
Yeah, well, see, those are things that kind of scare me. I'm lucky I have a great staff and just people that have been doing it for a while for the most part, and just don't know, we know how to work around things and do stuff like that. That's definitely croc monitors to me. I know they're like the fanciest and the shiniest thing right now, but man, there's not a lot of stuff that's actually like that animal. Reacts that animal. Like, that animal reacts first and then does everything second. Like and they're so fast and they so different. And I don't get me wrong, I think it's a fantastic animal.
Yeah.
But it is not for 99.9% of the people that think they want one.
I agree with you 100%.
It is not I don't even know if it's saying like any other monitor.
No.
It's just like just smart and quick, and like we make ours jump back and forth to eat. So like he'll jump like 3 or 4 feet back and forth to grab mice, and like
it's nothing.
Just the agility and just the way that thing goes, it's just an amazing animal. I get why people like them, but
yeah.
And there's something about that lizard that makes me go, I wish not everybody liked them as much as they do.
Yeah, for honestly, sure. Of all the things that I work with at Nerd, crocodile monitors are one of the only things that makes me nervous. Like when I go in there, because of how much space they can cover in a very short amount of time and how, sharp and how potent their teeth are. They are one of the few things that I take a lot of caution whenever I'm working with things, but I always double, triple, quadruple check everything I'm doing when I'm working with the croc monitors, because any little accident could be a very seriously like life-changing accident.
Yeah.
Yes, it's probably a worse bite than a venomous snake in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just would, yep.
You know, it has the potential just for, I don't know, especially depending on where you get bit. I mean, shoot, I don't even know. It scares me. I watch some videos. I see pictures of people out there that, you know, that do a lot of things with them, and I know they have experience and do things like that, but I don't know. I just, having worked with one for a long time, and then years ago we got wild-caught big ones in that at that store we had some, I don't know, probably 7-foot ones that were wild caught that just, those things I can remember, and I was a kid, like I was a teenager, like, and I can remember grabbing those things out, and like, you have like a physical feeling when you're touching that thing.
Uh-huh.
Like it just makes it. And then like my one story about a croc monitor that I think is cool, is it's cool and it's also scary, is I grabbed one time and its tail went around and whipped me in the eye.
Oof.
And so like literally whipped me in the, there I am holding this lizard that was a wild caught 7-foot ball of this all mouth, like,
yeah.
And it was showing, but I couldn't see anymore. Like my eyes teared up, and I was like, so I had to sit down with it because I was just like, I can't do anything right now. So
yeah,
I've been incapacitated.
Just sit down and hold on, and just wait till I can see again,
and
then kind of go from there. And I was like, you know, you can't really hand it off at that point. You can't see, and you can't whatever. So it's just one of those. You know, I don't know. I always remember that. I always keep in the back of my mind. And,
yeah.
We have one that we've had, I got from Dan Maleri, three years ago, maybe. And it's a nice animal, but he was cool for a while, and then one day was holding on to him. And I was just, and I wouldn't handle him very often, but I was looking at him, and I was like, you know, if he really wanted to get me, he could.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just choked up. Like, I just took his tail and, like, pulled back a little bit. And as I did, like, right as I did that, he reached over to bite my arm.
Oof.
And almost the hairs on my arm, he like nipped with, and I was like, man, I was like, he was even being chill. It's just one of those things. I think he was just waiting for the right time, and luckily I saw it before he did.
Uh-huh.
And you know,
damn.
So then I was like, well, that's the last time I even give you an ounce of
wiggle room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give him an inch, they take a mile, man.
but I mean, you can still go in there and work around him and do things like that. You know, it's not bad. It just, I don't know, just he was definitely waiting for his moment. And so I was like, well, I'll remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Oof. All right, so deviating just a little bit, I have to talk about some Amazon tree boas, because you have some freaking stellar red Amazons. So what drew you into Amazon tree boas originally?
So at that same pet store, I bought my first Amazon tree boa. So I bought my first Amazon tree boas in probably the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought it in orange, wild caught male, and a silvery female. Mm-hmm. I bred them probably like 2 years later, and then produced a red baby out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like really thought they were cool. And so I bred them every year for about 10 years at that point in time. And I just keep hairs together and get them. And he's such a cool snake, you know. And there's a guy, Rich Danielis, he used to be in, I think he's in New York actually now. But Rich Danielis had these really nice red animals. And so I bought a red animal from him and bred those for a while. And I had a couple of generations of that and was doing, making really, really, really good stuff. And then I did some drywall work around here, and then something happened and I lost that collection. So I think I screwed it up, and or else. And a few, a year ago, I don't know my time frame. So I didn't have them for a little bit. Then I just, after that, I was like, oh, it bummed me out a little bit. And then I was able to pick up this stellar male red Amazon from one of my friends in St. Louis, Mark Warner. And so that kind of made it so I was like, well, now I've got this thing. I've got to start trying to get some animals.
This
thing's true. I'm not doing anything else. And
the addiction, yeah.
So now I'm back. So I don't know. I think I have a red female that hopefully he'll be able to breed this year. Mm-hmm. How that goes. And, you know, I don't know. I kind of think I'm just going to focus on just trying to find as many, maybe I don't need a lot, but maybe just a couple pair of really nice red animals, or trying to make my own or whatever. But my goal is just to have a pair or two or something like that of just really good red animals and do it. And that red male I have is probably one of the nicest red males I've ever seen. I really, again, I think it was one of those things I just asked and said, do you have any babies? And he's like, I have this thing. And I was like, oh my God, what do I have to do to get that thing? And I was able to get it. So he's smoking hot.
Hell yeah.
And
so it's
ready to go this year, and then I'm working on getting another female that I think will work with him as well.
Nice. So you've got the focus on the red stuff then.
Yeah, so when I did it before, I had a lot of yellow stuff, and I had some bicolor stuff, which I really like, that whole yellow and orange. Like, I have a male that's like that too, so I may do that as well, but I'm kind of, my problem is that I like a lot of animals, a lot of species.
I have that same problem.
I was like, the things in my life that I've always had jungle carpets and I've always had Borneos.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I always had Amazon tweedles, and then I took a little bit of a break of that. Over the last, I don't even know how many years, but I've kind of picked up a little bit of this, picked up a little bit of that. I've had a good collection of womas. I have a good collection of ball pythons. I've got a few things. I bred some scrub pythons this year. I have a lot of lyasis, and so it makes it so it's like I can't have a whole bunch of everything. I've tried to focus before, and I just don't have the, I don't know what the right word is, but like it's hard for me to focus because I see stuff and I'm like, man, that's cool.
Yep.
Or recently, I have a whole lot of, you know, growing up in a pet store, there's a lot of stuff you just don't see anymore. Like simple stuff. Like I was talking to a friend today, like really nice, like black and white cow kings. You just don't see them anymore. It was like a staple. Or, you know, or like Sinaloans. You just don't see them anymore. And so I don't have either of those, but then I kind of feel like I should put a little more effort into doing stuff like that. There's things you don't see anymore. Maybe get a pair or two of this. I always had this idea that I should make like vintage herps, like make that my business name of some sort, and like go and find all the stuff that you don't see any, like, because it's like it just can go away. It's so simple, but it just kind of goes away.
Yeah, it really is amazing how those waves shift, you know, and things fall out of favor and popularity. Like they fall. Some species are just like they vanish, and you're like, huh? Remember when?
Well, I find that like I've been bringing Macaws pythons and owl pythons for the last 4 years or so or whatever, but I had Macaws a long time ago. You couldn't give them away. I mean, you could give them away, but they didn't sell very well. Now I could make, I wish I could make twice as many as I do, because I don't even advertise them. People just want them. They're great snakes. I love them. All the lace and stuff is so cool. But so I'm like, I try to put a little bit of effort into, I have multiple localities in Macaws that hopefully I'll be breeding this year. And
hell yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to, like, just stuff like that I just think it's neat and it's active. And like, I'm looking around my room now, and the only things that I really see moving now are actually Amazon tree bowls are moving, and owl pythons are looking out in Macaws. there's a Sabu head looking at me too. But like those are the kind of things that I just think are so neat that like, you know, now they're starting to get popular, but they've been cool snakes forever. People didn't pay attention to them for a long time.
Now people can appreciate them.
Yeah.
Yes, it's nice. I mean, it's like, you know, I think the ball python, which I never understand all the way, is there's always new people coming into the industry. Mm-hmm. So like how the trends work, I don't know that I understand how they work. Because the new people shouldn't really be affected by the trend. They should just like whatever they see. But they definitely go along with whatever's happening. So, you know, I mean, I still make a good amount of ball pythons. I think they're great. Every time I try to send them out, I find some other cool morph that I have to keep and make more of.
Yeah.
But like, there's so much other neat stuff. I mean, there's just so many. Like, I have Everglades rat snakes. I have, you know, corn snakes. I have stuff like that. You know, there's so many neat snakes out there that people don't appreciate. That it's like, you know, if I should like one of these Everglades, if I should, the thing's bright orange. Why doesn't everybody have one of those? People don't care. People don't even really care about them. So it's, somebody's got to. I figure I will.
I think that as social media is starting to expand and as people are kind of broadening their horizons, like they might have got one pet snake and then they join a couple Facebook groups and they start seeing some of the things that other people are into, I think that's really what is starting to impact the desire for a lot of those things that have fallen out of favor to come back into favor. Because like Honduran milk snakes used to be like everywhere. You could get a Hondo for $50 or you know, $75 tops, like that was tough. And then you know, as ball pythons gained in popularity, they kind of fell away, and then now there's like this resurgence of people who are interested in getting Hondurans, and they've skyrocketed in price. I've seen normal Hondurans for like $250. Yep. Like, and, you know, back in the day, if you saw one for $200, you're like, okay, what's wrong with you? Like,
yeah, exactly.
I made Honduran. I made albino Hondurans. I have Andrean albinos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I posted one picture, and I got more messages about that pair of snake. And I was like, I only have one pair, and I didn't make very many babies. But I was like, man, I was like, who knew? Like, yeah. It was one of those things. Like, you just thought they were the hottest thing. The hottest thing I made all year was the Honduran milk snake. So it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's what people need is they need to be exposed to that something that they haven't seen before for mm-hmm. them to be able to appreciate it. Because like, I get a lot of people who follow me who like keep a wide variety of different things, but then after seeing me post and talk about my scrub pythons, they're like, I didn't realize that scrub pythons are so interesting. And I'm like, I've known it forever, but I'm glad that other people are starting to appreciate them. Like, it's a double-edged sword for me because I love scrub pythons a lot, and I have this huge amount of respect for them, and I think that they're the coolest things going. But I also understand that they're not for most people because they are big and really strong, and if you don't know what you're doing, you can get, you know, fairly hurt by them. But I'm glad that more people are appreciating them just because they're getting exposed to seeing them from the ones, at least, that I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it just needs, like you're saying with your Everglades rat, people just need to be, they need to see it and see that, oh, this is why you appreciate this thing. I think I can appreciate that too. And just that exposure can really get people on the ball and get the ball rolling as far as, you know, Everglades rat snakes are gorgeous. That bright orange to them, there is no reason why they shouldn't be as, you know, as popular as a lot of the other colubrids. It's just that exposure. They need to get that exposure for them to really get their recognition, you know?
Yeah.
I agree. And I mean, I was lucky enough to breed scrub pythons this year too. So having babies is kind of like, which it's kind of weird. I have three babies here still, which they're all sold, but like some are super nice right out of the egg and some are not.
Yes.
which is, like, it's kind of weird. So like they're sitting here and like some you touch and actually the one that left already was not nice at all.
Yeah.
It's probably the prettiest of, well, I don't know. I have one that might rival it now, but like just, yeah, they're super interesting snakes. I mean, I don't know. We talked about having stories. So if you want a story about scrub python, my female scrub python, one day I get a call from the local animal control, and they're like, there's this big brown snake in the backyard of this house. And so they catch it for me. I had a friend that worked over there, and somebody had like left their house, like had abandoned their whole collection of just pets. It wasn't like, that was the only snake that I know of. It must have eaten a rabbit or a raccoon or a squirrel or something.
Oh, man.
So the thing had a heck of a belly on it, but it had gotten out of the cage somehow. It was in the backyard living in a wood pile.
What?
And so, yeah, so, this 9 foot of fury.
Oh, my God.
Scrub is, I get it. And they're like, can we bring it to you? Whatever else. And so I had it, and I was just going to, my original thought was like, I was just going to rehome it. I was going to find somewhere for it to go. Mm-hmm. And then I had it here, and I was like, I'd had cannon bars before, but I hadn't had any big scrubs.
Yeah.
But man, I had it like a 4x, like one of those 48x28x28 visions. And so it was just sitting on the top. And every time I'd walk in the room, it just would like look at me and kind of come down and check me out.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, man. And then after about 3 days, I was like, well, this thing's not going anywhere now. And yep. So I thought it was pretty cool. Luckily, I found a male not long after that. And then it took me, I probably had them for like 6 years before I bred them. But just they're super interesting snakes. Now, they've got the longest strike range of anything I think I know
of.
Yep,
and they'll use every inch of it.
They are no joke as far as like when they want to, when they're ready to get you. Or, I mean, they're just so, they can be so chill, and then they can, like, if they're ready, you just got to be careful.
Yep. Yeah, but especially at nighttime.
Awesome snakes. Yeah, super, super. I mean, that female, she was laying in the cage that was like, the bottom of the cage was probably like chest high to me.
Yeah.
And I opened up the cage one day, and she, in what seemed like a split second, her nose was on my chest.
Shit.
Oof. Like, and she didn't try to bite me. She just came out to just check me out. But it was one of those things that I was like,
whoa.
Like, I didn't, like, there wasn't even enough time to react. I guess I wasn't paying attention, or, like, thank goodness it wasn't, you know, I would probably act differently if it was something venomous, but I was just kind of like, I'm just looking. But yeah. Just like, man, it was the amount of speed that it had to get to where it was, and then kind of just rear back. Like, it's amazing. Like, it is one of those snakes that are super cool. I wouldn't want a lot of them. Like, I have a pair of Halmaheras, and I have some Meraki's, but like, I wouldn't want a ton of them. I don't think, but a few pairs is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure,
dude. Every time that I interact with them, I notice something different with how they move and how they interact with you. And every single one of them is different. And I just find that so fascinating because, like, after working with, you know, thousands of different snakes, to find something that is different every time you take it out and is very, I don't want to say they're reactive, but something that's very in tune with what you're doing, like they're reading you as you're reading them, I find that super interesting. And it always keeps me interested in them.
Yeah, and I kind of think, like, I always think about these different things. I'm like, I kind of feel like somebody needs to get a big scrub python and keep that for a few years and not get bit by it ever before they ever get a cobra.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for real.
If you can deal with, like, how to move that thing around, you can deal with a king cobra.
Yes.
Like, just having dealt with both of them kind of thing. Because they both move, like, cobras are a little, they're definitely smarter, although scrubs are smart, but cobras are on a different level. Mm. But, like, it's just kind of like, some of the movements are, like, king cobras are a little bit more agile, I'd say, whereas scrubs are a little bit more, I don't know, it's kind of hard to make the difference. They just move differently, you know what
I mean?
But I kind of feel like if you can put the effort in and have one of those things and not get tagged by it, that should be, like, your segue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for yeah. sure. And not a friendly one either, because I've got, I got a couple that are, like, really great, but... The working with a big angry scrub is definitely a formidable force.
Yes, and like when you get bit by those things, you remember it.
Oh yeah, I'm lucky, man. I haven't been bit by anything real, real big. Just smaller scrubs.
Yeah, that big female, she's got me twice in her lifetime. But those are things you don't remember. You don't forget those. And both of those, she's in the back of the cage and just like, I think they have like a. I would say she probably has like a 4 to 5 foot strike range.
Oh yeah, easy.
Like, it's crazy.
Yep. Yeah, my Highland scrub python at nighttime, if you do anything inside of her enclosure at nighttime, she is using every bit of her 3 foot strike range. Like, even when I'm like, okay, I'm right on the edge of it, she's not going to get me. She's come real, like, touched the hair on my arm before. Oof. And I was like, I thought I was out of range right there.
It's kind of what makes them cool, too. I mean,
yes.
You know, it's a neat factor in keeping them too.
Yeah, yeah.
I like stuff that's spicy. You know, like it's nice to have stuff that keeps you on your toes, because you don't get complacent. I mean it's nice to have some things in your life, like having Borneos and having ball pythons and corn snakes and stuff like that. Those things are all, they're, I don't want to say mindless, but they're a lot easier to deal with than something like those arboreal tree rockets you got to worry about.
Tree rockets. I like that. I like that. Tree rockets and meat missiles. Soon we will have
T-shirts.
Terrible names for multiple species.
Perfect.
Yes. And dude, I want to say first off, super congratulations on the scrubs, because scrubs are not the easiest things to breed, and it does take a lot of effort to produce those. And you produce some Meroki, the southern scrubs, this year, and the Borneo clutch that you produced this year. Holy moly! I am like geeked.
Yeah, I would tell you that was my most exciting clutch to open up for myself.
Yes.
When I opened those things up, because I think I told you the story on text, but like I had 4 years ago, I had three clutches of Borneos, and I was like, I was like, that's too many to have, so I sold all of the adults.
Yeah.
And I just kept the best pair. And so I was, and the male that I have is just fantastic. Like the female is really good too. She has a nice orange head. But the male I have is like, he's like the epitome of like the perfect animal. And so like these babies, they're better than him, I think. I mean, it's kind of crazy. The babies are just, I need to get them going. But I'd say I did feeding trials and about half of them have eaten, but they're only like a month old, so they're not really that old. But just it's crazy to think of what's going to happen to these things, because they're all very marbly, and there's a lot of striping, and there's a lot of like aberrant pattern to them. So there's some good orange heads in there too. It's gonna be super cool to see what comes out of those. And I picked one female out, and I was like, I'm not gonna keep so many. Maybe one pair I'll keep, and then I'm gonna let the rest go. But I'm gonna kind of wait and see what happens with them, I think. I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens. They're super nice.
Yeah, I was looking at those, and I was like, I would keep that one, and that one, and that one, and that one. The parents are so nice. They've got these, like, bright, like, peachy orange heads, and, like, these nice striping, and the speckling on the marbling on the sides. I was just like, those two animals are going to make some incredible offspring, and you know what? They did. They made some really, really cool stuff.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Some of these orange heads, like, some of the orange heads with the, I don't know, they're going to be crazy. They're going to be crazy. So, I kind of feel like I'm going to get another meal into them or two, maybe, and then I'll probably start taking pictures. It'd be nice if they shed sooner,
Nope. You got to wait. I hatched out some in May, and they haven't had their first sheds yet.
I know, it's such a pain. Like, I mean, they still look good, but it'd be nice to get, like, that fresh, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's a bad thing or good. It's nice that they eat, so
yes.
I can't complain about that too much. But
yeah,
it is kind of one of those things. It's like, it'd be good if they would just shed so I could get good pictures and figure out what to do.
Yeah, for sure. And so you're only planning on keeping a pair back from that?
Yeah, because again, it's one of those things. I don't know. Is that a good idea? Maybe should I keep more? But probably just a pair. I'll probably, unless I go through and I'm just like, it's amazing. I know Matt Minatola said he picked one out like right off the bat, and so the male that produced my pair was one that I got from him, and he's a super good friend, so he can have whatever he wants, kind of thing. Whatever he picks out, I guess, as long as it's not the one that I picked out. But I don't think it is. Other than that, I think that's all I'm going to worry about is probably just try to pick out a pair. I really like the striping stuff on them, so I'll probably just pick out the female that I picked out has a lot of striping and some good marbling, and so we'll kind of go from there. It's just the genetics on those things are so interesting to me. So I took just like the original parents, the grandparents had no, there was not a marbled anything in any of them. It was a super stripe. It was a matte super stripe bred to the parents to that one were bred to a Keith McPeak ghost stripe line animal.
Mm-hmm.
But the stuff from Keith, the red, the head, that's where the orange head comes from, is that stuff from Keith. So that mom, that grandmother was like, she had a red head.
She was
stripey, and she had a really nice red head. So it was pretty much just the perfect pairing, I think.
I agree.
Because, like, I bred that same male to a ghost female and got all ghost-looking animals. And then I bred him to a, it was like an 18-year-old female that I'd gotten from Tracy, just a straight Borneo. And they almost came out all normal. So, like, it had some striping. But it's so weird how Borneo genetics are so interesting.
Yeah, so variable.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, you never know what you're going to get. Obviously, with these, everything has marble in it. So this marble to marble is going to make it, you know, so at least that way you know you're going to get what you're going to get. But it's just so interesting to breed that stuff because it makes it, you know, it's not predictable. It's kind of like you got to wait and see, which is exciting.
It's like the Amazons where you're like, okay, I kind of know what I'm going to produce. But then every now and again, you're like, what the heck is that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, I've gotten really lucky with Amazons. I had a yellow pair that I bred a pair of yellows, and all the babies would come out yellow. And then when I had I had that original Rick Stanulis red male, actually it was red female, everything I bred, no matter, I used an orange male to her, and when I did, I got like 80% were red and 2 were orange.
Wow.
And one garden. So, like, these red ones, man, if you get the right red ones, which I'm hoping these are like that, it was like, it was almost like it was dominant. It took over.
That's
cool. I like that.
About that. Yeah. So I'm hoping to find out. I know somebody, maybe Abby, maybe I saw somebody on the internet saying that they were putting together something like that, and that part of the reds had some dominant to them, which I was like, I really hope that's the case. Cause that's one of those things that I'd have, like, I could see myself boarding some of those.
Yeah.
Not that
yeah.
I want, not that I needed so many, but I could, like, I don't know. You can hoard everything. That's the problem. That's my problem. That's why I try not to do it. I'm a pair or two kind of guy. Like, I like a pair or two of this and a pair or two of that. And I'm like, you know, that way I have a backup if need be, or I can have multiple bloodlines and not have too many, because I definitely can have issues.
Mm-hmm.
I know.
Keep too much stuff.
I know that feeling oh so well. I've never been able.
You guys are in the same boat as me, because it's like I work with animals all day and then I come home more with them again at night.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, yeah. So it's like, yep. You guys are the same way.
Yeah, and I am in the same boat as you, where I like too much to not work with it. So I think I've probably got maybe like 120 animals or so, but probably like 15 or 16 different species.
Yeah, a lot of species.
You know, and I've now come to an understanding with myself that I can't fit anything else in that room right now.
That's what I was
going to
say.
How, but I mean, can you really do that?
I think I did. I didn't think it was possible, but given the limitations of my room, I think I did. But it has forced me to start looking at those few species I have a lot of.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't need that. I could make space for this that I really like.
Well, I'm at that same place with you, where I'm like, I really don't know that I could fit any more. I do have 2 empty cages in here, but I actually have 3 looking around. But they have something that's going to move into them. But
exactly.
Yeah, I'm at the point where it's like, I need to be careful with what I do. So I'm not as good about that as I should be, but I do my best.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, empty bin. Oh, no. It's already got, somebody's already going in there. It's just not happening today. And something's going in there.
Well, and that's why I have a cage open, because I have 1 Madagascar ground boa, a male. And I'm like, I've got to keep something open, because if a girl comes up, I've got to be able to put her somewhere.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they are not the easiest thing in the world to come by. So
true.
Not at all.
I know you guys made some, but you guys aren't selling any, probably, are you?
I'm not sure, because every time that I assume that Kevin's not going to sell something, he's like, put it up for sale. And then the things that I'm like, oh, we're definitely going to sell that, he's like, are you crazy? We're keeping that. And I'm like, okay, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Until he tells me that it's for sale, or he tells me it's not for sale, I don't make any assumptions anymore. But we did produce a pair.
Like everybody else.
Yeah, we did produce a pair this year. So we've got the adults and then the offspring that we produce, 1 male, 1 female.
So there's no way he's selling a lone girl unless he sells both. So.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
Because it wouldn't surprise me if he sold both of them.
Yeah, because I mean, we have
the adults.
2.2.
Yeah.
Or something, yeah.
I don't know. All right,
we'll keep you in mind.
Yeah.
So you've got a couple kids, and they have shown, you know, a little bit of an interest in the reptiles. Do you see any like future us in them? Do you see any them turning into like reptile keepers and down the road, or do you think that they might go off in their own direction?
You know, my daughter likes to do whatever she can do with me, kind of thing. So, like, mm-hmm. we had eggs pipping today, so I bring them out there. She always gets to look at everything. I try to make sure she's involved whenever I'm pulling any eggs or pulling whatever else, just so she gets to see it. She likes it, but she kind of, like, gets over it, whereas, I mean, my son is 16 months old, so I don't know that he could tell you exactly what he wants, but,
yeah.
Man, if you go somewhere and there's a turtle, he's going to see that turtle. He wants to touch that turtle. Like, that's... He is all about, like, we were talking about that this weekend. We went to a place and there were some turtles, and he was just, like, enamored. And we have some reptile tortoises outside. He just loves that kind of stuff. He's a little bit rough. I've tried to get him to do some snake stuff, but he's a little bit too rough. So,
yeah, being so young, yeah.
Because he's, well, you can't tell him. You can, so you're not going to listen. you know, so you can't really tell him to do so much. He likes, if I come back here, he's always like trying to get in the door, and he likes to come look around, and he likes to look around. So I kind of feel like if anybody's going to do anything, it would be him. Plus, he's also fearless. I know he's a little boy, and he's, you know, he's little, but like my daughter is kind of, I don't know, but she's cautious about most things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, I don't know that she would jump into things like. She'd come back here and do whatever it is as long as everything was, like, safe.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I've started buying animal plastics cages with the locks and try to switch over some of my stuff to that because I worry about, as he gets older, he's going to be like, oh, let me just see what the heck's over here. What's over here?
Yeah.
He's just going to be kind of balled to the wall as far as things go, which I could, like, the way he is, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, if he sees a dog, he grunts at it. If he sees an animal on TV or anything else, he, like, growls at it. Like, he has, like, he interacts with any animal he sees.
Yeah.
So he definitely is, he intrigues me to see what he'll end up being.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So far, he's just a wrecking ball.
He's a child.
He is all boy, and he is, I don't know, I feel like all we do is just try to make sure he doesn't get hurt. He's just going to be into everything. He's going to lead with his head, and he's just going full force wherever he can. He's adorable, but he's determined.
it's a good trait. It just needs to get reeled in and maintained appropriately.
Yeah, well, as soon as he gets to the point where he's at the point now where you can tell him to do whatever, and he listens somewhat, but he's not old. Like, as he gets a little bit older, it'll be interesting to see how he develops.
Yeah.
He really has no fear. It's nice. But it's, I feel like all we do is just try to make sure he doesn't get hurt.
Well, boys will be boys. That's for sure.
There's definitely
gender differences in this house as far as those two. And everybody we talk to, it's crazy. She's so, like, I don't know. She's just so much easier than he is as far as that kind of thing goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, if I don't really have plans on having kids, but I could see that being like the thing that stresses me out the most is just the idea of them going into the reptile room and opening something up. Cause like pythons, blood pythons, short tail pythons. And I eventually do want to work with venomous. And that would just like keep me up at night just thinking about that. I'd have like a lock on the door and be like, nope, you're not in there unless I'm in there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we have two, like, in our house, the snakes are in the back, so you'd have to go through two doors to get here, and there's the lock on the door here, and then as you get in here, I have racks and stuff. I have racks on the bottom and cages on the top.
Yeah.
For the most part, and so, but the cages have locks, and, you know, just try to make it so it's as, you know, they can't get in here, they really can't get in here unless you let them back here.
You're in there, yeah.
But I will say, you know, I waited until I was 40 to have a child, which I think was, you know, it was one of the things where I was like, this is crazy. But it actually kind of worked out, and I wouldn't trade it as far as anything goes. It's definitely, if you do have some, you'll like it. They'll change your world, but you'll like it.
Yeah, I love being around kids. I love teaching kids, and like that's one of the things that's definitely helped me in doing education and doing programs and stuff. Is that I love how interested kids can be when it comes to reptiles and animals, and like almost every kid is like fascinated in some way with turtles. Like I don't know what it is about turtles, but it just draws the children's attention, and and so I always love doing programs, because if I can get kids interested in reptiles, that means that they're not going to want to hurt them. If they see someone hurting them or you know, someone being mean to a reptile, they're going to stop that person. And that's better for everybody. It's better for the animal, and it's better for everyone else too. And that is definitely something that people have always been like, Rob, you gotta have kids because you'd be a great dad. And I'm like, yeah, I would be a great dad, but I'm also very scared of the world right now. So I'm not not trying to have, you know, it's just, it stresses me out thinking about it.
So a friend of mine once told me, because I was at a point in my life where I was like, I'm not gonna have kids, the world doesn't need anymore. Yeah. And he's like, if the good people don't breed, who's gonna offset the bad ones?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
But you know, also, you know, kids are great because they're not, you know, they're not born fearful of snakes. People teach them that, you know. So all of this stuff that, you know, it's all learned behavior. So, you know, if you can teach them when they're little, you know, I mean, to like some of this stuff, or just to appreciate, they don't have to like it, just appreciate it or understand it and not be, you know, really nobody has to love the stuff. As long as they just understand that it has a role.
Yes.
And that it's, you know, that it's an active part of the ecosystem, and it's something interesting, and it's another living being. You have to understand how they work. And, you know, I don't know, I always try to talk to people, you know, like you put a live rat in a cage and the snake doesn't want to eat, the rat eats it. Like, they're not malicious. They're not just going to go kill stuff to kill stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, they do it because they have to, not so much because they want to, because a lot of these, you know, there's plenty of snakes out there that have gotten bitten by things that, you know, if they were smarter and, if they were, I don't want to say smarter, but if they'd be like, you know,
for my survival, I should probably kill this thing. It's going to kill me otherwise.
Yeah, they're, you know, in nature, they just would leave.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And then we put them in a box and they can't leave.
Yeah.
And then the rat wins those things. So, you know, they're not these monsters that people make them out to be. It's just they're, and so that's, I mean, what you're doing too. It's what I do every day. You know, our job is to try to teach people that, you know, these animals are here for a reason. That, you know, that's why I was just trying to say, don't, you don't have to love them, but just understand them and just realize that they have a purpose. And
yeah,
you know, they're not out to get you. None of them are out to get you.
Yes, 100%. Like, my dad is from the Caribbean, and so a lot of the people who live on his island are very afraid of snakes, even though the island that he comes from, Dominica, it does not have any native venomous snakes. All the snakes that live on that island are non-venomous, to my knowledge. He is terrified of snakes. He's been terrified of snakes his whole life, and he didn't come to the United States until he was about 20 years old. And to this day, he's never willingly touched a snake. Like, the other day, he came up and visited me at Nerd, and I had just come back from doing a 5-year-old's birthday party, so I was, like, bringing snakes in and bringing some reptiles and putting them back into their enclosures and stuff. And I had brought a, like, maybe 10 or 12-foot-long reticulated python, one of the cow retics that's, like, just gorgeous, right. And she's super laid back. One of the ones we had brought to Tinley last year. And I took her out of the bin I'd brought her in and start feeding her back into her enclosure. And my dad is like, oh my God, that thing's huge. How can you do that? He's like standing on the other side of the room. He's like, no, that's too big. And I was like, this one isn't even big, Dad. What are you talking? And so I like took out one that was like probably like 16 or 17 feet long. And he's like, it's the size of a telephone pole. What are you doing? It's good. And he's like freaking out. And I'm like, Dad, you know that I work with these every day, right? And like, I'm still alive, so they're not that bad. He's like, you know, I understand that, but I just can't get over. Like, I just been raised to not be cool with them, so I'm not cool with them.
You should have brought them over here.
No.
Seen the 20 footers.
Yeah, the 20 footers. No. Nah. Even those ones make me nervous, man.
Yeah.
They're too big.
Yeah. No, I know. Trust me, I know.
We had a 19 foot retic that was, it's just, you can't even control those things all the way. So you get somebody around that's not comfortable.
Yeah,
I mean,
not good.
You got to be careful with those things. But yeah. Like, on a similar note, my parents have never been to the since we've renovated the reptile building. My parents have never gone to it to see it.
Yeah,
it's not their thing, you know. So, you know, they, I don't even know if they've been in my snake room. Like, I don't even, like, they may have. But
yeah,
They were over here for birthdays. They were over here for a birthday party, and I brought one of my nephews in here, and he like was in here for about 35 seconds, and then he was gone. So like nobody had a desire to come look.
Yeah,
my
yeah.
older brother did. He looked longer than his son, but like, yeah, they just, you know, some people have it, some people don't. I always just think it's weird because I had a ton. I wasn't allowed to have snakes until I made Mummy Breeding Bearded Dragons. So I had lizards for the first few years after I convinced her to let me have those.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then my first snakes were carpet pythons. And so, but I was breeding bearded dragons. I was like, look, Mom, I can make money on this kind of thing. I can do whatever else. And that was the only way that I actually got her convinced her to let me get snakes. And so by the time I moved out, I had a trio of coastal carpets and a pair of green tree pythons. And that was,
damn, what a way to kick it off.
And yeah. Those were my first snakes. And so that, you know, but she was like, she could have cared less about those things. The only thing I ever had that she really liked was I had Chinese water dragons as a kid. She loved those.
Yes.
But everything else she could have cared less about. And monitors, I had like Savannah and I had a black roughneck. Those things could go away. And she, to this day, if I put a picture up of a monitor, she'll be like, I don't like those.
See, my mom always kept tarantulas, and she's always been into the reptiles and stuff.
That's cool.
So when my nephew started showing an interest, like he's just like 6 years old now, and when my mom brought him up to visit, he's like, I want to hold everything. I gotta touch it. My mom's like, oh my god, he reminds me of you when you were that age.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but my mom loves it, and she's always had tarantulas like the entire time growing up. Even before I was born, she had pet tarantulas, and so she still loves. She's actually got my first pet snake that I ever got was a ball python, and I've had him for 17 years now, right around 17 or 18 years. And when I moved out, she was like, "Are you taking all the snakes?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "I kind of want to keep Monty, because we used to use him for educational programs," and she just was like, he likes being, you know, around the house. And I was like, that's fine if you want to keep him. So she's still got my first ball python, and she loves him. And so my nephew gets to hang out with him and get some reptile time when he's not hanging out with Uncle Rob. So I appreciate that. And it's just like, it's cool to see, you know, how he's so into it. And then me and then my mom. But my dad is like, nope, no, thank you. Yeah. I am so not into that. Oh, it's too
funny.
Awesome
that your mom's into all that stuff.
Oh yeah, dude, she's hardcore. Dude, you want to hear a crazy story? So, 2009, I went to the Daytona Beach Reptile Expo, and I convinced a bunch of my friends to come down with me, and my mom came down too, and she like helped us book the hotels and everything because we were like 20 years old or something like that. And so while we're at the expo, my mom comes up to me and she's like, they have salmon pink bird eaters here. And I was like, what? And she's like, you know, like I've been looking for a bird eater, like not the Theraphosa bird eaters. I want the salmon pink bird eaters, and they've got them here and they're not expensive. And I was like, yeah, but we flew here. So like we can't do that. I've not shipped the tarantula at that. Actually, I might've shipped tarantulas at that time. I was like, I could probably ship it, but like, it's not practical right now. Why don't we just buy one when we get back? And she's like, I don't know. And then she went away for an hour and came back with a little vial. And she's like, I bought one. And I was like, how are we going to get this home? What are you doing? Like, we have to go through airport security. She's like, I'm just going to put it in my bra and it'll be fine. And I was like, you're not going to do that. Like, that's not going to get through airport security. And she's like, oh yeah, want to bet? No joke. She put it in like a smaller vial, put it right in her bra, got right through airport security, and got it all the way back to Boston. I was like, are you kidding me right now? That's so wild. Yeah. That's in 2009. That's like after 9/11 when they were doing all the security checks and shit. But she's like, she looks like an innocent old woman, like, so, because she's got gray hair now. Like, she's got gray hair. So, like, they never would have suspected her of doing anything. And if she found it, she's like, I would have told them that I just found it on the floor. She's so crazy. I love it.
Your mom's like a real life lizard king.
She
yeah, legit.
She is like, she's all about it. And so I don't know. That's definitely where I get it from, though. It's straight from her.
Yeah.
It's no question because it's not my dad.
I just wonder about buying animals just to have them so they get to see them.
Yeah.
You know, I've thought about getting some scorpions or some some spiders just to have them so the kids just see them, so it's not something that's novel.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's one of those things that do you need all that stuff? But I don't know. Those are the kind of thoughts that go through, like, how can we, you know, what can we do to make it so they're exposed to as much stuff as possible?
Yes.
And they get to go to the zoo, and they get to go. We just went on vacation, and they got to go to an aquarium and see things. We stopped by. I have a friend that has a little the Outer Banks lizard land down in, on the way down there. So we stopped and looked at some lizards down there, and after he got to, my son got to see some tortoises. They got to run around. But like, try to do as much of that as possible, just so they're exposed to things, so it's not so new and crazy.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. My my folks when I was growing up were very similar to yours. Like, I had lizards first, and then I had to like convince them to get the snakes, and was like, well, you know what, all right, fine, I'll do the little book report or whatever you need me to do, you
that's
know
what I had to do.
You know, my mom, I remember, I think it was like when I moved up here, my mom was like, you know, Jeremy's all moved up, whatever, it's weird that the house is empty, but the weirdest part is not having 100 snakes in the spare room anymore.
Yep.
You know, and she's like, I kind of miss that. And I was down there visiting, and she still has my my redfoot tortoise.
Mm-hmm.
All
right. And yeah, and she's like, it's all I have.
That's
because when I was really like, when I had all my stuff there, like, she used to help me come in and like take care of the carpet. She loved carpets. So she loved carpet pythons. So whenever I was cleaning the carpet pythons, she would be like, do you need help with the carpets? And like, she'd just like be like, yeah, here, hold this 7.5-foot coastal carpet python. She's like, wee, like take it into the other room. And she loved it. And, I think the only time she was ever really mad at me for bringing a snake in the house is when I snuck that big berm into the house. It was like a 16-foot berm. It was like, she's like, what the hell is this? I'm like, it's a snake.
I wouldn't have survived if I did that.
It's fine. It's
my
a snake.
My dad
would have
killed me.
Yeah, my dad never really minded until the topic of how many animals I had came up, and then he was like, there's too many. And I'm like, that's fine though, it's fine, you don't even do anything.
Yeah, you don't
with
have to
them.
Take
it's
care of them,
fine.
It's okay,
it's fine, but you have too many, you don't go outside. I'm like, yeah. I don't need to go outside.
You need to go outside.
I have all these things that were outside are inside now. I'm okay.
Oh man,
that's funny. Some kids got video games, you had snakes.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah,
exactly.
For real.
I transitioned right from Pokemon to real Pokemon.
Yeah.
So.
You gotta collect them all.
Collect them all. That's
gotta
right.
Catch them all.
That's okay. Right. Oh, man.
It just becomes a way of life, you know. I mean, and that's, you know, and I don't know if it's this way, but like all of my friends, well, not all, but like 90% of my friends in life and career and whatever else have come from my reptile hobby.
Yep.
You know, from like most of my best friends are from when I worked at the pet store. You know, my job came from working at a pet store. It's like all of those things is just whatever you have. You know, I mean, life changes as you have kids. You get new friends, you get new things, which, you know, I have a lot of cool new friends that I've met because of that. But, you know, my oldest friends and oldest, like the way of how just life goes is all due to being involved in reptiles. So, you know, it's got so many good avenues that come from it.
Yeah.
That aren't weird, you know.
For sure.
So I still have friends. I'll see stuff, especially on Facebook. They'll be like, because I get to identify every wild snake all summer long and spring and fall.
Oh yeah, yep. Always, yeah.
My phone is going off every day, whatever else. And some of my friends are like, "You're that weird snake guy." And I'm like, "Hey, I'm just, you know, whatever else. You know, as long as you're not killing it, I don't care. You call me whatever you want." And then I'll be like, "Well, I try to do this to educate you and whatever else." And they actually, 20 years later, start to appreciate it.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. And it's funny to me because I've filtered my Facebook friends so much that like, and most of my friends have come from the reptile hobby. It's weird to me because like, some of my friends, they're like, I hate it. Whenever I post a picture of my snake, I get a bunch of people who comment about how gross it is and you should burn your house down and blah 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 and all this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I don't think I've ever gotten one of those because if anyone, I don't think I would even add someone who would say that. Like, I don't have friends outside of it's very few people that are in my like bubble that aren't reptile people.
Yeah, and the good thing about it too, like I always think about, like for me, the people that I looked up to the most when I was a teenager and early 20s and going to Orlando and whatever else, like the Keith McPeaks and the Craig Trumbauers of the world, whatever else, like are now my friends, you know? It's I spent all the, like I could, like Keith especially, when I was a, I don't know, I was probably 19, I would just gawk at everything, because he always had Marble Borneos and he had Tanzini and he had, or else I would just like, I don't know, I probably bothered the crap out of him. At least that's all I did. And then as we got older, I talked to him more and more, and like, you know, we text regularly, and we have actually his daughter and his daughter has a daughter that was born the same day as my son. And so his daughter and my wife have become friends on, you know, through Facebook and through whatever else. It's just, you know, it's kind of awesome. These people that were your idols, and they're probably still my idol a little bit, but you know, become your friend. You know, it's like, it's amazing to be able to have that, which I don't know that there's any other things you do that, like, the people you look up to so much become like your peer. And they might even ask you a question.
Yeah.
So that's
the
crazy part. You know, now Keith might be like, hey, do you have an idea about this? And I'm like, you're asking me?
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, and that is definitely something that I love about this hobby, is that you can get there. You can get to that point where, you know, I definitely looked up to Keith. I look up to, you know, Kevin. I looked up to Kara. And now, you know, I consider these people like, not, I don't want to say they're my peers, because I feel like I'm still like, hey, I'm just this weird reptile kid. But like, you know, I talk to them on a regular basis and we're friends. And so if you had told me that, you know, like 15 years ago, that would be the case, I probably wouldn't have believed you. I would have been like, nope, those guys are, they're doing it. They're doing the reptile thing and like really crushing it. And I'm not that person. But it's just been very humbling to be able to, you know, consider Keith a friend and Kara and Kevin and like some of the other people that I've met through the hobby. And it's just, it's very, you know, it's not many other avenues. Like you were saying, there's not a lot of other avenues of your life that can happen. Like, I love Scarlett Johansson movies. I'm not meeting Scarlett Johansson. I've accepted that fact. It's not happening. And I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. It's okay, Rob.
Yeah.
Well, and then you also get to the point where, like, I have a good friend that has a pet store here that, you know, at this point in time, I have, like, I hate to say it, but, like, I guess I was somewhat of that person for him, you know? And so, like, he sent me a message before and been like, you know, it's so crazy that we're friends now and we hang out. Like, I never would have thought that 15 years ago or whatever else. And it's like, so, like, I don't know. I would never would have thought that. I influence him in the same way that those people influence me.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it's cool to be able to be that person, you know?
Hell yeah.
For sure. I was just talking to somebody last night who had reached out to me on Instagram, and they've been a follower of mine since like
J&D.
The old days of like J&D. And he messaged me on Instagram, and what he wanted to talk about, I would have much rather discussed on the phone. So I was like, call me.
Yeah.
You know, here's my number, call me, whatever. And he called me and he's like, dude, I honestly can't believe we're actually talking on the phone right now. And I was like, hey man, we're reptile people.
Yeah, we're reptile
like,
people.
It doesn't matter. We all like the same shit. But like that is never, because when I used to do YouTube, I used to get that at shows. People would come up to me and be like, oh my God, I love your YouTube and blah, I can't believe I'm meeting you. And that has never felt normal.
No,
to
it's,
me.
It still
like,
feels weird
ever,
to me. Yeah.
Ever. Yeah, but I think it's funny because I'm listening to you guys talk about the circle of friends and everything. And over the years, especially as I've grown my musician friends, I never would have thought that anybody would have been like, oh, I see your reptile stuff all the time. And I literally, like, I take my mask off for 1 second and am literally hit with, you're the guy that you work with, Kevin. Gah, what? Why are you here? And I'm like, I'm also the trumpet player. And that's probably been one of the coolest things for me, is like having moments where both of what I do actually combine and collide with each other. Like I've been asked in the past to like write music for other podcasts that used to exist years ago that don't really exist much now, and like, but that was always the coolest thing. I was like, woo, I get to
reptiles
both
and
things.
Yes, music, yeah.
Yes, I can do it. you know, but that's always been really cool for me. But every once in a while, I'll get somebody as a musician that sees me post something about a snake. They're like, bah, what is that? Why is this on my timeline? Or I'll get recognized at musician trade shows. And they're like, you're the guy that posts all the damn snakes. My news feed was normal until accepted your friend request.
Oof. Yeah, my sister-in-law was like, one time I put a video up of a scrub eating or something like that, and she texted me and was like, I just unfollowed you. I just want you to know that. So
oh, man. Yeah. All right, so we are actually winding down towards the end of our time here, but at the end of each of these episodes, we usually like to ask our guests one final kind of like wrap-up question, and that being, what in the realm of reptiles, be it something in your collection, something that you've seen on social media, or, you know, anywhere in the realm of reptiles, what has got you excited about reptiles?
Oh, man, what a question that is.
I know.
You know, the thing for me that gets me excited about reptiles is, I'm telling you, like, every day there's something new that I'm like, should I get one of those? it's weird. I have this collection of all these amazing Indo-Australian pythons, and I have some, you know, and then I have some corn snakes, and I have Everglades rat snakes. And then today I'm like, you know, I haven't seen a really nice black and white Gal King in a long time, like a striped one.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I started looking, and then I'm like, ooh, I kind of found that. I even like posted the thing on a Colubrid Crazy thing, and I was like, and then people sent me pictures, and I was like, man, that was exciting. And I'm like, I used to buy those for like $22.
As a
wholesale animal. I'm like, today, I was like, man, that's exciting. Like, and they're like $150 or something. They're more expensive. But I'm like, you know, to me, the thing of reptiles that's so exciting is that happens to me. Like, probably daily. I don't know. It happens to me all the time where it's like, I'll just catch a glimpse of something, or I'll start, like, thinking about something, and I'll be like, man, I haven't seen those in a while. Maybe I should have one of those. There's never an end to what I'm learning and what I think it intrigues me. Luckily, I don't act on all of it and get everything, or I would be overwhelmed. But the fact is that, you know, I've been doing this. How old am I? So, I've been doing this, like, 30 years of my life, you know? I mean, 30 years of my life I've been doing this, and I'm still excited about it, you know? Yes. And I'm still excited to hatch a baby, and I'm still excited to get a species. And I have an idea in my head now of, like, I need to get all the species that I had or that I worked with when I was in my early 20s that you don't see anymore. I'm like all that simple stuff that was around, like, I feel like it's going to go away and nobody's going to be able to appreciate it. And I'm like, you know, I have those things in my head that I can fall back on. But it's always exciting. I work with it all day. I work 40 hours plus a week with it, and then I come home and my kids go to bed and my wife goes to bed, and I work in my snake room until I'm tired and go to bed, you know.
Yep.
But I'm never, you know, I'll have a night where I take a night off or whatever else, but, like, I'm excited about it every day.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
My wife sometimes tells me that I'm more excited about it than some of our family things that I need to work on.
The plague of a snake keeper.
Legit.
I think I don't know that there's a single thing. I think the thing that excites me the most is that it's exciting. You know, it's just, I think it never gets old. I don't do it for a living, but I mean, I have enough that it helps me here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't ever see it where I'd be, like, without or 5 or 10 or whatever. I don't even know. Absolutely. You know, I always been like, would I want to get down to like 4 pairs or something and just have it so it's like easy and whatever else? But I'm like, I don't even know that I could do that. I couldn't figure that out.
For sure.
Because I like so much, and even sometimes it's the same one. You know, like womas. I have 5 womas, but they're all different. Like, I don't know that it'd be hard to pick one. I mean, I've picked through them over the years, but I've produced all the ones that I have. So I've picked out the ones that I like over the years. So it's like, it's so hard to even pick a single out of a group.
Mm-hmm. All right, so if people want to find out more about you and what you're doing, where should they look you up on social media land?
Just look up Dennis McNamara. I just have one Facebook page. I don't have a business page or anything. It's just mine. So I try to post on groups when I have babies so you can, or if you have a question or anything, you're welcome to message me or Instagram. I'm BBDennis on Instagram. Either one of those. I try to post pictures whenever I think about it, and sometimes I have a lull. But yeah, so if you ever need to get in touch with me, those are the easiest ways to get in touch with me. And I don't know, I think I'm pretty responsive.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
So thank you very much for coming on tonight, man. We really appreciate it. It was a good time. We're going to have you on again sometime again soon.
Yeah, that went by very fast.
Yes, so. It did. All right, man. Take care. Have a good night.
Thanks, you guys. Have a good night.
See ya.